Welcome to the FantasyGuru.com Franchise Focus Podcast. Now here's Matt Kemp, Joe Dolan, and Tom Brawley.
And it's time for another Franchise Focus Podcast here at FantasyGuru.com. Matt Kemp, Joe Dolan, and Tom Brawley. Ready to talk some Pittsburgh Steelers with you today on this one. We'll talk about the moves that they made, the moves that saw them let guys go, the fantasy implications, and some draft targets for them coming up at the end of April as we're starting from the bottom of the first round, moving our way up into our second week of these Franchise Focus podcast. And rest of this week, you'll hear the Bengals, the Eagles, and the Bills. But we'll be around the halfway point of these podcasts at the end of this week. So make sure you check them all out, Blog Talk Radio. And, of course, we got them all for you at fantasyguru.com. And we're, of course, talking football. There is no real offseason. We're getting into all of it. But the MLB season is, in fact, underway. And FanDuel is changing the way people play fantasy baseball. It's more fun than ever. And before the season really gets into gear, you got to sign up now for one-day fantasy baseball at FanDuel.com. The leaders in one-day fantasy baseball for real money with immediate cash payouts. Entry fees start at just $1. Stop waiting 6 months to win a league. Play today and win tonight. You could pick a brand new team any day you want. No season-long commitment and no upfront fees. Make every game exciting with FanDuel. And I think that commitment thing, Joe, is, you know, when you play in the season-long leagues, you're doing your drafts in March, and you're like, okay, this is not going to be over for 5 or 6 months. So we are going down the road here on the fees that I dropped into those leagues. I'm not going to see anything back maybe at all, and not certainly for another 6 months. But with FanDuel, you're playing tonight. You can turn that into cash immediately and maybe pay off those league fees right away.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. Because fantasy baseball is such an undertaking, and I think it's why fantasy football in general has a wider audience, because it's less of an undertaking. There's more immediate reactions to fantasy football. Well, FanDuel has figured out a way to kind of replicate that with fantasy baseball, and it's very strategic, and I think if you play, you might get surprised by how much you enjoy it if you aren't typically somebody who likes fantasy baseball.
Eric Hafner from California turned a $125 deposit into over $62,000 playing fantasy sports on FanDuel. Join him and the over 1 million other users who have already won money. FanDuel is paying out more than $2.5 million every single day this MLB season, but you have to play to win, so sign up today. Go to FanDuel.com and click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner. Use our code GURU and sign up now. Special offer for new users. Every dollar you deposit, FanDuel will match it with up to $200 that gets earned as you play. That's a bonus of up to $200. Offers only good for the first 50 people that use our code GURU. Don't forget to use our code GURU. FanDuel.com, where every day is a new season. That's FANDUEL.com. FanDuel.com. Sign up today. So as we get into the Steelers here, guys, kind of similar ways that they go about things to the Packers. They kind of re-sign their own guys. If they think they're worth anything, they'll let you go. If not, you don't see them spend big money on any free agents. It typically doesn't happen. We'll talk about some of the additions that they made, but no real major commitments in terms of paying, you know, any of these big-time free agents. And Tom, as we know, that's kind of the Steelers. That's what they do.
They've also spent too much money on some of their own players, right, that have been past their prime, so they haven't been able to be major players in the free agency market.
And
so,
Tom, wouldn't you argue that part of that reason, though, is because they haven't really drafted all that well?
That, too.
They've drafted well on the offensive side of the ball. They've been hit or miss.
They've hit some big times with Brown and with Martavis Bryant last year, but they've also whiffed here recently with Ziggy Hood and
Jarvis Jones looks like a whiff at this point.
If you're a team like this that builds through the draft and doesn't go out and sign these guys, you can't really miss in the draft.
And you look at this, we were talking about, you look at the offensive side of the ball. The Steelers have done a really good job drafting, I think, moving on from guys at the right time. They moved on from Mike Wallace at the right time. They moved on from Rashard Mendenhall at the right time, or probably maybe a year too late, but you know what I'm talking about. They hit on those picks. Le'Veon Bell, big hit. Antonio Brown, big hit. Martavis Bryant at this point looks like a hit. Obviously, we have a very small sample size, but they've done a really nice job on that side of the ball. The problem is Pittsburgh Steeler football. When you talk about the Steelers, the defense.
It's been defense in the past.
And they have not drafted well at all. And that's led to Ike Taylor playing too much. That's led to Polamalu playing too much. They had to bring back James Harrison, who had a great year last year.
But that's what they have to bank on. Is a James Harrison coming through for you? That's a
Brent Cecil having to come back and play. I mean,
for an 11-5 team, I mean, there were holes in this team. You know, they played games where you go, they stink. And then they played games where you go, all right, I don't want to see this team in the playoffs. I thought that's the direction that they were going in coming down the stretch last year, because I think this offense in the last 2 years has morphed into quietly one of the best, most efficient offenses in the league, and a team, as we've talked about with the defense, that's had their struggles, that's never out of it because of this offense and because of superstars like Bell and like Antonio Brown, and the guy we'll talk about first, Ben Roethlisberger, who has had his issues and injuries and off-the-field stuff or whatever, but I think it's now gotten to that spot where you're like, he's pretty damn good. And he's a quarterback that may not get mentioned as much in the Brady and Breeze and Rodgers and Manning conversation, but the numbers are there, especially in the last 2 years. He's had some, you know, at times quiet years, but last year was a tremendous season for Ben, and he might have been one of the best values last year in drafts or auctions at the quarterback position, and he came through with huge numbers.
Well, I kind of liken it to this. I kind of liken to the way Ben Roethlisberger was discussed 7-8 years ago with the way Russell Wilson's talked about now. Well, the guy's an elite quarterback because he plays for an elite team.
And he won.
And he won
early.
And then people started to realize that that was a flawed way to talk about Ben Roethlisberger. Because we saw in the first couple years of his career, when he ended up having to do a little bit more, he was still struggling. This was a guy who was learning the position and landed in a really good spot to learn, but when he was asked to do more, struggled a little bit. Then I think the narrative came back around that, oh, Ben Roethlisberger's a good quarterback, but he's not a great one, because when the team's not there to elevate him, he doesn't step up to the task. But now, if Ben Roethlisberger goes down, I don't think this would be like 4 or 5 years ago when the Steelers could kind of tread the water for a little bit with Charlie Batch or Leftwich. He is the guy who makes this thing tick. Without Ben Roethlisberger, this is bad football.
I mean, they have the pieces, but it's all together now, and he's a big part of that. He allows you to let a Mike Wallace go and go to Antonio Brown. Now, not that that's a knock on Brown, but, you know, you have these pieces, but he's the glue. And I don't think he was necessarily the glue, as you're talking about, like it was back then when he came up and won right away, because they had a much better defense. They had a ground game that could carry him. Right now, their passing game is one of the best in football, and he's a big part of that. And I know he's been able to overcome the injuries, and the O-line has improved, and that's certainly helped him. That's always been an issue, right? The O-line for the Steelers. And then, like, last year, it was a strength of the team, which we've rarely said during the Roethlisberger era.
And then Todd Haley has gotten some grief over the years, but he has found a way to, make the offense easier, quicker throws, shorter throws. He's stayed healthy the last 2 or 3
That's
years.
Right.
He's playing in 16 games. He's not taking the hits. He's getting the ball, to these talented guys like Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, getting it out to them quick, and they can make plays. So, I mean,
and I think there were some compromises there with Haley from when he first started, because there were certainly some angry people. I just watched Snoop Dogg's Instagram on Sunday afternoons and nights, but there were some people that I think they had fair gripes, Steeler fans, fantasy fans, and it started to really gel, I think, last year. And you could see, hey, they're the first team ever to have a 4,500-yard passer in Roethlisberger, 1,500-yard receiver in Brown, and a 1,300-yard rusher in Bell in the same season. I mean, this has become an offense-first carrying this team, and that's why they were 11-5 last year.
The carried them for how many years, and now
that Steelers football is out the window. It's different. It's a different brand of football.
That's
now
why the conversation about Roethlisberger doesn't I think a lot of people put him in the upper echelon tier, but I don't think the general public thinks about him the way they think of Rodgers and Manning. And it's because
they think they still think he's the Roethlisberger.
And I wonder
if
he was in that conversation almost too quickly. And as you said, Joe, it kind of came back around, and now you go, you know what? He's pretty damn good.
Yeah, it's and also I think obviously the sexual assault issue and the suspension maybe made him a persona non grata in a lot of people's minds, and as well it could have. But anyway, when you talk about Roethlisberger, I think a lot of the complaining about Todd Haley kind of surrounded him. And it was obvious that there were some disagreements there. And I think Ben Roethlisberger is a guy who hey, he's huge and he has a big arm. He wants to play in a Bruce Arians offense. He wants to throw the ball 70 right. yards down the field. He doesn't have to do that as much in Haley's offense. And fortunately for the Steelers, Haley's offense, I think, fits the personnel really well.
Amazingly, he just finished his 11th season, and they handed him a lot of money. And I think the deal made all the sense in the world because he is coming off a career year. When you go into year 11 and have a career year, that's certainly saying something there. 23.6 fantasy points per game. One of his best, it was his best season ever. In fact, it was his best season ever by nearly a full point, and that goes back to 2009. 49-52 in terms of the yardage, nearly 600 more than 600 yards than he's ever thrown before. 67.1% completion percentage, the best he's ever done. 32 touchdowns. Tied the number he put up in 2007. 9 interceptions, another fine year. In terms of a full season, that's his best number ever. So, a lot of career highs. There's obviously really no rushing. He did a little bit more earlier in his career, but career highs here for Ben. But it came in a year where he was going as what, the 14th, 15th quarterback. Where does that put him going into his 12th year? He just turned 33 in March. I mean, you could still say he's pretty much right in his prime, especially with, you know, maybe he has a Bell and he has a Brown where he can kind of rely on the talent around him a little bit more, especially with the O-line improving. And the O-line improving at a time where he is and going into his 12th season, he is 33 years old. Is he a guy that you no doubt take as a top 10 quarterback, but yet could you probably still wait on him? Because I don't feel like he's still getting that kind of bump for fantasy. And you know, you always usually take the under on a career year, but I certainly think that these numbers are sustainable, especially if their defense is going to struggle again this year.
I was just going to say that. Their defense may be even worse than it was last year. And I see this. This team's going to be a fantasy juggernaut again next year. I mean, and you got Wheaton. I mean, Wheaton and Bryant, they're going to progress as, you know, they're second, third-year receivers now. And Antonio Brown and Bell, they're two of the best fantasy players out there. And they're going to get production for Ben no matter what.
We'll get into the receivers here, but Joe, where's he going right now in MFL 10s? Where is he going in terms of what quarterback, what number of quarterback is he going, and where is he actually going in these drafts?
Number 9 quarterback. Generally a 8th round pick, mid to late 8th rounder.
Awesome.
And right ahead of Matthew Stafford, right ahead of Ryan Tannehill, right ahead of Tony Romo, which I think is a fair place to tier him. I still think, if you're asking me about early MFL 10 data, that Eli Manning's the best value of all these guys, who's the 14th best quarterback. We'll talk about that when we get to the Giants podcast. But Roethlisberger is going after Cam Newton, and I think I'd rather have Roethlisberger without a doubt at his price than Cam Newton. Peyton Manning's the 5th quarterback off the board, which I think is totally awesome, especially in an MFL 10, when you don't have to worry about having
health
the guts to bench Peyton. I think he's going in a fair spot, right after Matt Ryan and right after Tom Brady.
That's pretty fair.
And I mean, I think you can make the argument for Roethlisberger over both of those guys, but I don't think it's egregious in either way. I think it's a fair spot for Roethlisberger, but as we've talked about in the past on these podcasts, it's kind of the fantasy football sharps who are playing this right now, where Roethlisberger isn't going to fall behind some lesser options who might have more hype surrounding them, for instance.
Doesn't he hit, I mean, where Joe's explaining where he's going, I don't know if he's going to go that much higher, because like I said, I don't know if he gets mentioned in that upper echelon, but that would be a quarterback target for me, because we've all talked about we're not going to take the top guys based on where they're going, but if Ben's there in the 8th round, I'm there all day long taking a guy like Ben and a young guy behind him, maybe.
And it's why I won't have Andrew Luck and Aaron Rodgers on fantasy teams this year, because these guys are available. And I had Roethlisberger in a 2-quarterback league last year, actually, with Rodgers, and I mean, the guy carried me all year. Unfortunately, those two guys finished the season really slowly. Neither here nor there, but because of a guy like Roethlisberger, where he's getting drafted, it sounds cliche to say I'm waiting on a quarterback, but guess what? I'm waiting on a quarterback because of where he is available. And he's right ahead of Stafford. We just talked about Stafford on our Lions podcast. The guy was terrible for fantasy and in real life last year. Roethlisberger 10 times out of 10 for me.
That's what I don't understand, is even after last year, when Ben does what he did and with a career year, and Stafford has his worst year, that people are still going, oh, he'll bounce back.
The Stafford talent.
But guess what? Talent-wise, I'm taking the Steelers over the Lions, even with Calvin Johnson and Golden Tate over there, because you're talking about Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell. You could argue those are two of the top five picks in fantasy heading into 2014. Now, as we get in, though, to Le'Veon Bell, there's a caveat to that, and that's the looming two-game suspension for the marijuana arrest last year. Now, luckily, after the change with the CBA and all that and the rules, it would only be a two-game suspension, which is good. Can you still take him as the number one overall running back, knowing right off the bat that if he gets a suspension, you're not going to have him for two games? You got to throw out week 17 probably on that too. So you're starting in week three, but you're talking about a guy who was about as valuable as you could get and as consistent as you can get at running back. And one of those guys that, yes, he did have 290 carries. Yes, he did go for over 1,300 yards, but you know you're going to get 100 yards out of him every week because he's so involved in the passing game. 83 catches, 854 yards, 104 targets, just one of two players to have more than 80 targets. Excuse me, three players to have more than 80 targets last season. 104 targets, you know, Matt Forte, 130, Fred Jackson at 88, but a very busy player was Le'Veon Bell. So I think the concern here, and maybe it kind of gets pushed back, is, well, if he's missing two games, he's that much fresher, maybe.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Maybe that's after a 370 touch, you know, season. Maybe missing the first two games isn't the worst thing for him, especially if you use the first, second pick on him. Hey, maybe you just go a little earlier and take D'Angelo Williams with the number 10, you know, 10th round pick, 11th round pick, depending on where he's going in ADP. So I don't think it's the worst thing in the world that he's going to miss the first two games of the year.
You know what else I like? He scored 11 touchdowns last year. That's not a high number for a running back to finish among the top 10, to be among the best in all of fantasy.
It's a good number.
It's a good number, but it's not
but
the...
But you wouldn't expect it for the number one but overall.
Exactly. That's my point, is that, you know, he wasn't so touchdown reliant last year, whereas other guys, you know, Marshawn getting 17, 13 of them coming on the ground. Bell scored a rushing touchdown every other game and had three receiving touchdowns. So I still think you can make the argument for taking him number one. Could you make the argument for taking Antonio Brown number one in a draft?
Sure.
Because he has been so money, and once again, so consistent. Once again, every game, five catches, 50-plus yards.
Two straight years.
I mean, he double digits in every single game. Guys, his lowest output for fantasy points per game, fantasy points in a game, 13.4 in a Week 5 game against Jacksonville. That was five catches, 84 yards. That was
That's
his
worst
game of the season.
And he
finished with every game from Week 11 on with at least 20.2 fantasy points.
That's the last two seasons that he's done this. This is unbelievable, the consistency. That's why you can make the argument for Antonio Brown. And I don't think it's ridiculous in the least. Yeah, and while I'm still of the mind that, you know, if you can get one of those top-end running backs, it's a much rarer asset to have than the receivers. Having Antonio Brown in your lineup, how many fantasy championship teams had Antonio Brown on them last
Probably
year?
A lot.
A ton.
Yep.
And the guy was a first, second-round type of receiver. More a second-round pick because
I was going to say, he was more like the 7th or 8th receiver take.
People didn't believe in him, I think, in large part because of his size. But you take his size in context with the fact that he's playing with Roethlisberger and in a good offense, it just makes all the sense in the world.
And he was coming off a career year and then just boosted all of those numbers. After 110, 14, 98, and 8 on 165 targets in 2013, 19.3 fantasy points, he boosts everything. Goes to 129 catches, 1,698 yards, unbelievable, averaging over 100 yards a game, 13.2 yards per catch, 13 touchdowns, 181 targets, a monster number, 23.9 fantasy points per game. He's going into his fifth season, but has just been tremendous over the last two, and as Joe mentioned, size. He's not your prototypical number one outside receiver, but you know what I like? He's battle-tested, and you go, well, who's the best corner in that division? Joe Hayden, right?
Tears him up.
I think you would think so.
And he's owned him.
Yep.
I mean, he's got that
He had a rough year last year.
He did, but he's done this before. He has owned him. And that's a thing where you go, you know, there's always concerns if your guy's going to face Revis or Sherman. Antonio Brown has gotten it done against big-time guys over and over because I think it is because he's a different kind of receiver. He knows how to get open. He is polished across the board. He runs great routes and he can get downfield. He does everything you possibly could want from reality standpoint and for fantasy.
I think it's a serendipity type of thing, too, because he's playing with a quarterback Antonio Brown, by the way, is great at creating windows with his play style, the way he gets open, wins against routes, wins against corners. And while he torches guys from time to time, he creates subtle separation more often than that. And Roethlisberger's a quarterback who trusts Antonio Brown. If there's a little bit of separation, Roethlisberger's going to anticipate that separation. He's going to put the ball in a tight window. So I think this is a kind of a teamwork, the way this is going here.
And are we going to see any kind of chemistry and that trust start to develop with some of these younger receivers here?
Well, I mean,
they had real struggles with Marcus Wheaton, and you know, Martavis Bryant came in later in the year and did pretty well.
That's one of our questions here we got on Twitter, and you can send them in to us using the hashtag FranchiseFocus. Send them to at FantasyGuruSite, at TheMattCamp, at FG_Brawley, at FG_Dolan. And this is from KAlex17. He says, what is Martavis Bryant? Very basic here, but I think I get what he's saying is, what is he for fantasy? Because last year, you know, his value was totally tied to what he did in the end zone. And in 10 games, remember, he got off to that ridiculous start where he scored 6 times from week 7 to week number 10. Now, he went over 83 yards in one game, over 83 yards twice in that time, 5 for 83 against the Colts in week 8 with 2 touchdowns, 4 for 143 and a touchdown against the Jets in week number 10. That was a very odd game the way that went. I think that touchdown, in fact, came very late. But 100 yards in one of the game, but you see, 3 games with 1 catch. He had 2 touchdowns after week 10. He did not hit 50 yards more than 1 time after week 10. So it was very, oh, look at all the touchdowns he's scoring. Oh, he's not scoring touchdowns again. After week 10, he didn't top 10 fantasy points. He did it 1 time, I should say. He topped 10 fantasy points just 1 time. So he was very up and down. Now, he's a young receiver. I get that, you know, he's a rookie. You have Wheaton there as well. It still feels like that situation has to kind of shake itself out. Who is the number 2 receiver here for the Steelers? And is that answer going to be out there by week 1?
I hope so. I think you kind of saw it a little bit in the playoff game where they fell behind a little bit. And they showed their true, you know, what they really believe. Brian played on 82% of the snaps in that playoff game. And they showed that they started to trust him more than they trusted Wheaton. So hopefully that's a sign of things to come, because I think Brian's the more talented player. And he should be, you know, the number 2 receiver.
And by the way, on the season, Brian played 45% of the snaps in the second half of the year, while Wheaton averaged about 58%. Now, the Steelers played, as you said, 82% of the snaps in the playoff loss. So did they start to see something there? You know, I think we're leaning towards Martavis Bryant as the guy that could be the number 2 there. But I still think Wheaton, Joe, has a role here of some kind. They're not giving up on the guy, but did Bryant pass him already?
Oh, he's passed him, and fantasy players believe it. Anybody want to take a guess as to where Martavis Bryant is going on average in my in MFL 10s as we sit right here?
I would say in that 36th receiver taken.
Going that high. 6th, 7th round-ish? 6th round.
5th.
What?
5th round. Oh. He is the 25th receiver on average off the board. So fantasy players believe this guy is on the verge of being a number 2 fantasy receiver. As we sit right here, and I like Martavis Bryant's talent.
That's way too high.
Rich as hell. Wouldn't you say, I have higher hopes for him than this, but wouldn't you say Martavis Bryant for fantasy, the best, a reasonable expectation for him this year would be kind of a Torrey Smith type of player?
That's what I was thinking.
He's going ahead of Torrey Smith in MFL 10s. He's going ahead of Jarvis Landry, who caught 80 passes last year.
I'm okay with Landry. Bryant is, that's people projecting. Now, the other thing is you have Torrey Smith going from Joe Flacco to Colin Kaepernick, so I get why there may be some trepidation with Torrey Smith.
He's going ahead of Roddy White. He's going ahead of Andre Johnson and Dante Moncrief.
But aren't people playing the format, though? With Martavis Bryant.
I think he would say they're playing the format with Bryant. Yes, absolutely. But that's still, these are some names that he's going ahead of. Now, this is a lot of projection here. I think he has that kind of talent. And I think you have to take into account that they're playing in a good offense. That's why you're seeing Jordan Matthews being drafted as a top 20 receiver, which actually I think at number 18 is pretty reasonable.
And we've talked about this earlier with, like, Devontae Adams. People buy into that.
Guys in
good offenses.
34, by the way, at wide receiver for Devontae Adams. So I think 25 is a late fifth round pick. Very high for Martavis Bryant at this point. I don't know if he's going at that spot in redraft leagues.
In redraft leagues, I'm missing one. Do you have to take a guy like that high? I feel like there's enough talent at wide receiver. You don't have to go be the hero and take him that high.
Yeah, I'd much rather.
But you want a piece of this offense. I get that.
I'd much rather take the risk with my number three receiver. And at that 25 spot, that's more likely, you know, your second receiver, maybe your third, but that's just a little too rich for my blood. I'd rather get him that 30 to 36 range.
Quickly going back to Bell here, you know, the only guy, you know, Dree Archer's here. Josh Harris had to become a little
Dree
bit
Archer
more.
Is there?
He's still there.
Oh, no. Okay.
You know that guy?
Never saw him last year.
I'd love to see him.
He played just 51 snaps as a rookie. So and I know people are hoping for a bigger role for him, and I really hope he doesn't have a bigger role if it cuts into Bell. Josh Harris had to come up when they got rid of LeGarrette Blount last year, but they do add D'Angelo Williams, who I think we just hope doesn't become too much of a touchdown vulture, if anything. I get why you want to have a guy like that to maybe take something off of Bell's plate. And as you mentioned, Tom, two games here. Maybe Williams is a guy to just kind of have there as a handcuff. If you're going to take Bell, I don't think you have to go reach to go get him. I mean, if you take Bell in the first round, I don't think you're going.
You might want to if you take Bell.
You're not going to go, oh, I have to get him in the seventh round. I don't think you have to say that. And he might go there. I mean, someone will go, oh, well, he's there. I'll go grab him for two games. But I don't think you need to do that.
Do you have the ADP on that one, Joe, for D'Angelo?
D'Angelo and Bell, actually. Williams.
All right. That's interesting.
Let's get the backfield.
I'll tell you, Bell is overall the number one pick in NFL tennis.
Okay.
1.27 average pick.
Once again, the format. It makes all the sense in the world that you're with two games missed, if that happens.
D'Angelo is the number 67 running back off the board. After Alfred Blue, after Pierre Thomas, who hasn't even been picked up by a team yet, after Danny Woodhead, Chris Polk, a bunch of rookies, David Cobb, Lorenzo Talaferro.
So it seems pretty reasonable if you take Bell with the number one overall pick, you can get him the 11th, 12th round.
In MFL 10, I think that's pretty reasonable for anybody to take. A guy who's guaranteed to start
two starts,
two games, or not guaranteed yet, but you assume that's coming.
Yeah.
I think that's a pretty nice pick to take. Maybe you're sitting around late in a draft and you're like, oh, I went zero RB in this draft. Why not take a guy who's definitely going to start the first couple weeks of the season and see what
I get?
And then
you try to patch it together later with waiver wire moves.
And Heath Miller last year actually coming off one of his better seasons and was a, believe it or not, starting caliber tight end last season. But that
didn't score touchdowns.
He didn't score, which has kind of always been his game. He averaged exactly 10 fantasy points per game last season, which put him as the number 12 tight end. 66 catches on 91 targets, 761 yards, just three touchdowns. 12th, as they said, at the position.
Is that Martavis Bryant effect there?
Right. Is it Bell just being the man? Obviously, Brown. And they made bigger plays last year on a more. They had those chunk plays like the Packers get. You saw more of that. So maybe that was it. It was just, you know, we have other weapons. We don't need you to be the big red zone guy. Has just four touchdowns on 25 red zone targets in the last two seasons after eight on 20 red zone targets in 15 games in 2012 before the torn ACL that season. Just kind of a guy, and I think he's a replaceable guy. If you're ever stuck, you throw Heath Miller in there and hope for the best, but he doesn't have to be as important to this team as he was 4, 5, 6 years ago because they have all this talent around him. So, you know, is that a guy that they look to find an eventual replacement?
And like we said with these younger receivers, that his role might start to diminish a little bit here. So,
which would make all the sense in the world.
Yeah. You want to get the guys with the most talent. You want to get the ball in their hands. So
now for the draft here, as we start to wrap this thing up, I think defense is the key. I think their offense is taken care of pretty much across the board. Maybe like I said.
I think one of these years they have to address cornerback and safety.
They have
to.
Unfortunately, safety is not a position to look at in this year's draft. But you'd have to think defense pretty much across the board here, right, for the Steelers. Now, we don't want it to get too good because we love how busy the offense has to be. But, I mean, I don't see why they would really – obviously, you always want to look at a lineman, and maybe you want to grab another back here at some point. But isn't defense really all the things that the Steelers are focusing on in this draft, especially picking in the second half?
Outside linebackers, they've produced those guys like crazy over the last 15 years, but all of a sudden they're in dearth. They have Jarvis Jones, who's done absolutely nothing. Jason Rhodes is now retired. So now your top pass rusher on the outside is – 37-year-old James Harrison, you got to address that. That's cornerback and outside linebacker.
Fortunately, it's a really good draft for those two needs. Outside linebacker or edge rusher, I guess, is the chic term and makes sense. these days. And cornerback, very deep draft at both positions. I would expect the Steelers to address both,
yeah,
frankly.
If they don't go cornerback, outside linebacker, first two picks, I'd almost be kind of surprised.
Pittsburgh radio and Pittsburgh fans, Pittsburgh Twitter, up in arms last year when the Steelers passed on Darqueze Dennard. Yeah.
And they were upset whenever Fuller went to the Bears, the pick before them. So, yeah, this year I'd be shocked if they don't take a cornerback.
Because the offense is so exciting, it could be a boring draft for the Steelers, but they need one of those drafts coming up at the end of April. So that pretty much wraps it up here for our Steelers Franchise Focus podcast as they look ahead to the 2015 season. We're already underway in the 2015 MLB season, and FanDuel is changing the way people play fantasy baseball. It's more fun than ever. With the season getting underway, now is your chance to play one-day fantasy baseball at FanDuel.com. Entry fees start at just $1. You don't have to wait all season long to make money. If you play today, you can win tonight. You can pick a brand new team any day you want. There's no commitment for the whole season, no upfront fees. And you can make every game exciting, and that lack of commitment, Joe, is, you know, a thing that we all like to embrace sometimes in the world. And maybe you have a good week in FanDuel and you take a day off. Or maybe you want to stay hot. Hey, I'm putting together some good lineups. Or you're trying to ride a hot hand of a player and maybe his value is still pretty good. Maybe his price tag hasn't risen yet. You can take advantage of some of those early season price tags for guys that, you know, haven't made that jump yet or didn't come into the season with high expectations. Maybe those price tags are something you could take advantage of early in the year.
And if you forget to set a lineup, doesn't matter. Get them the next day.
That's right. Eric Hafford from California turned a $125 deposit into over $62,000 playing fantasy sports on FanDuel. Over 1 million other users are in on it, and they're paying out more than $2.5 million every single day this MLB season. But you have to play to win, so sign up today. Here you go. The important stuff. You go to FanDuel.com. You click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner and use our code GURU to sign up now. Here's the special offer for new users. For every dollar you deposit, FanDuel will match it with up to $200 that gets earned as you play. That's a bonus of up to $200. Offer is only good for the first 50 people that use our code GURU. Don't forget to use our code GURU. FanDuel.com, where every day is a new season. That's FanDuel.com. FanDuel.com. Sign up today. Reminder that you can get your questions in, as we answered already on this show, for future podcasts. Maybe you have some responses as you hear the podcast or come up with questions after the fact. Use the hashtag FranchiseFocus. And then tweet them to us at Fantasy Guru Site, at the Matt Camp, at FG underscore Brawley for Tom, at FG underscore Dolan, FG underscore Dolan for Joe. That's the way you can get a hold of us. All of the podcasts are up at blogtalkradio.com/fantasyguru. We also have a list if you want to catch up right at fantasyguru.com. And by the way, you can jump in on our early bird fee right now for $24.95. That's $5 off the regular price for the 2015 season. And you don't have to wait until August or July or September for content, because we have plenty going up. Besides these podcasts, you'll have the post-Franchi podcast, John Hansen and Greg Cosell, already up. They're getting a pre-draft podcast up there very soon. Joe and Tom had the pre-draft rookie report. I did some stuff on on distance and bonus articles that you can kind of look at where guys scored. Keeper and dynasty rankings are up. Stat articles are up. There is no off-season for us, even if there's an off-season in the NFL. We have plenty more coming your way, including the rest of these franchise-focused podcasts. So for Joe Dolan and Tom Brawley, I'm Matt Camp. Thanks for listening. Right here at fantasyguru.com.